You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
So we are so excited to be joined today on the New Books Network with by Dr. Waleed Mehdi, an assistant professor at the University of Oklahoma with joint affiliations in the Department of International and Area Studies and the Department of Modern Languages, Literatures, and Linguistics to discuss in detail his new book, Arab Americans in Film, From Hollywood and Egyptian Stereotypes to Self-Representation, forthcoming this month, August 2020, published by Syracuse University Press. Dr. Mehdi, thank you so much for joining us to discuss your book today.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Well, the first question that I have is maybe a bit of a general one, but I wonder if you could perhaps talk a little bit about how this project was conceived and how you came to approach questions of cultural citizenship through the analytic of cinema and cinematic representation.
Thank you. I think part of what made me excited about writing this book, initially I was very interested in looking at cinema and at Hollywood and Hollywood's representations of Arabs and Muslims in general. But I was drawn into looking at how cinema, Hollywood in particular, looks at Arab Americans as a site, you know, because we're speaking of an American community that comes from a specific national background, and to what extent did Hollywood engage with the community really? And of course, it wasn't surprising to learn that primarily the industry has engaged with represented basically Arab Americans through the lenses of foreign policy and national security. So it wasn't surprising after all, right? Because the field of Arab American studies has already provided scholarship that talked about how Arab Americans in the U.S. have been otherized through gendered, sexualized, racialized ways. And I felt that there was something missing in a way because I was not quite satisfied with how theories or theoretical understandings of Arab American otherness have been constructed. That's what I started thinking of. What about visiting other sites, other cinematic sites, and looking at how are they producing understandings of Arab Americans? And Egyptian cinema appears to be as a very promising site to study. So it didn't take long for me to start looking at films in the Egyptian context, and then soon I realized the importance of comparison and looking at representations of Arab Americans in the comparative way between Hollywood and Egyptian cinema, then enabled me to ask several questions and conclude really that the otherness of Arab Americans in cinema in particular is not cannot be thought of primarily as a byproduct of Orientalist and racialized histories in the United States, but as an outcome of nationalist-driven sort of polarizations mainstreamed in Hollywood and Egyptian cinema.
Definitely.
And of course, there are personal experiences that made me more interested in this kind of inquiry. Personally, the reason I thought of doing the comparison is that when I'm an Arab American and I've been traveling back and forth between the United States and several other Arab countries, and whenever I visit a country or come back to the United States, I feel like my identity itself is being questioned all the time. Yes, I'm an American citizen. I have an American passport, but there's a line of in the passport that says that I was born in Yemen. And that's always an interesting sort of reminder to authorities, whether in the U.S. airports or in U.S. in Arab airports, that I'm not. It's not easy to narrate me in a way, right? So I'm constantly confronting various ways of thinking about my identity that do not necessarily respect my own. Voice and thoughts about how I won't like to identify myself. So I was so this book then became my own personal statement, if you like, as a sort of critique of how usually master narratives, mainstream narratives, tend to exclude Arab Americans in ways that erase their ability to mainstream their own voices in a way.
Right. And the idea of like erasing a complexity of an identity in sort of these very glossed over reductionist narratives. Well, you mentioned the sort of main theoretical contribution of the text, and I would love to return to that and come back to that. But first, I was hoping maybe to talk a little bit about the methodology that you employed in actually doing the research for your book and the dissertation that it's based on, and the sort of methodological choices you make. And so, of course, you say very early on in the book that you're centering film as a site of critical inquiry because of the possibility of, you know, visual images and the power of film to reflect and shape collective memory as well as national identity. And then in the epilogue, you sort of return to that by saying, you know, by acknowledging how this analysis might be expanded by, for example, talking to the people that were involved in producing a lot of the films that you discuss in the text, or, you know, sort of doing some ethnographic work. And I was wondering if perhaps you could speak a little bit about the methodological choices that informed your analysis and why you maybe chose in this text, at least, to focus on just the films themselves, rather than all of the context that surrounds their production.
Yeah, thank you. So, I mean, that's a very good question, and it's one that I have to think about very carefully as I develop this project. And for several reasons, I ended up making my choices. So, to begin with, I'm not a film studies scholar in a way, because I was not necessarily trained in film studies. So I was more of a cultural studies individual who have grown to appreciate textual analysis, images, identity, questions of identity, how identity is projected in a way, narrative, plots, characters. Those questions appeal to me in a way because by virtue of my intellectual training. So I'm not trained in technical, for example, filmmaking processes that that would enable me to go deeper into analyzing technical aspects of films in general, right? And at the same time, I felt like choosing to work on the films that I've identified in this work, and I've watched hundreds of films, by the way, American, Arab, and Arab American war films. So, which was already a very time-consuming process, but a very exciting one as well. Choosing to do so, I thought, is an exciting way to to somehow scan or get a bigger picture of how identity, how questions of belonging, how the particularities of a culture in a way, how they are codified and projected in the screen. I felt like that the ability to scan, to watch all those films gave me the chance to scan a visual sort of repertoire, you know, of understandings of oneself and the other, in a way. I couldn't do a reception-based studies. This kind of focus was important to me. That, but at the same time, I couldn't do reception studies, for example. I couldn't do audience-based questionnaires and surveys and generate their reactions, because I was not necessarily interested in how people reacted to these films. I was more interested in critiquing the filmmakers themselves, how these filmmakers sort of produced what they produced, what kind of codes they worked with, how they then mediated their own understandings of others based on cultural understandings of others in a way. So, so I thought the type of questions posed in my work necessitated for me to then look at, identify films that are relevant and critique the messages that these films promoted. And that somehow forced me to make some tough decisions sometimes. You know, I couldn't do, for example, an ethnographic work. I couldn't go, yes, I visited Hollywood. I talked to directors and actors. But I couldn't do a more like a systematic sort of interviews and get their thoughts on that. And because I thought at some point I would bring my own critical evaluation of the films aside from how actors and directors frame them. But at the end of the day, even the type of conversations they had with actors and directors were limiting already, you know, and they couldn't empower me to produce a more in-depth a critique of the work, because you sometimes whenever I bring a critique of a film in Hollywood, for example, I get easily dismissed, you know, because they'll say it's just an entertainment, you know, you're reading too much into it, you just, it's meant to for quick consumption, it's not meant to make a statement. But that's not how I see it, right? So yes, these kind of interviews tend to be useful, but at some point they were not useful enough to kind of carry this the critique that my work wanted to focus on. That's basically for a number of reasons. The type of questions I posed, how I went about answering them, necessitated for me to carve for myself the right space and identify the tools to present the analysis that I presented in the book.
No, definitely, and it's interesting to hear that directors might themselves sort of be quick to dismiss this kind of analysis and say, oh, right, exactly, that it's, you know, that films are meant for quick consumption, that they're just entertainment. But I think what you showed throughout the text very clearly in the breadth of films and, you know, just in their sort of deep analysis, the ability of film to sort of really transcend its perception as just quick entertainment and really show how, these sort of quick images or might actually be reflections of something much deeper beyond just, you know, a quick thing in a film that is like released as a summer blockbuster, for example, as a Hollywood film. Definitely.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And okay, so to perhaps then return to the sort of theoretical contributions of the text, of course, something that you said earlier, and the main kind of theoretical contribution of the book is to sort of transcend the perception that, you know, Arab American otherness would be a product of US Orientalist or racialized histories only, and to show that, you know, that sort of notion of Arab American otherness is an outcome of polarizing notions of the self and of the other that exist in both US and Arab state racialized histories. And I wonder if maybe you could sort of expand a little bit on that, with regards to the discussions in the first and second chapters of Hollywood films on one hand, and then Egyptian cinematic films on the other.
Yes, thank you so much. That's exactly how I'm advancing my argument in the book. And it starts with the first two chapters where I survey a mainstream mediation of Arab American, or the notion of Arab Americanness in Hollywood and in Egyptian cinema. In Hollywood, since the 70s, I look at films that started from the 70s. And in Egyptian cinema, I look at films that start from the 90s. And I realize soon enough, you know, once you start seeing the images while surveying those films, is that, yes, there have been changed a little bit, slight change in Hollywood between the films produced in the 70s and the films produced in the 9/11, post-9/11 context. But really, the bigger picture at the end of the day, despite the changes, as good as they might be or might seem, still have enhanced nationalist understandings of Americanness. That is WASP-centered, basically. That is white-centered. That is sometimes dismissive of minorities. That associates Americanness with certain tropes that any challenges to those tropes then get easily dismissed. And it's not something necessarily unique to the Arab American context, because Hollywood has done that to African Americans, to Native Americans, to Asian Americans, to all kind of hyphenated Americans, really. In part because that's how the industry functioned. But the troubling part is that it underscores a very sort of important dimension to a populist narrative of whiteness that conflates whiteness with Americanness in a way. So there is that correlation of racial and nationalist understandings of identity that tends to sometimes erase the existence of multicultural others. And in Hollywood, that becomes possible. It becomes possible, for example, for white actors to play any other ethnicity.
Right. Yes.
It's kind of hard for other for Arab actors, for example, to play white characters. You know, so it becomes there's that sense of entitlement, sense of privilege in the filmmaking industry itself. But the messages, the images that the industry itself produces, usually conceive America in very, very racialized terms. And when I looked at the Egyptian cinema, things appeared differently at the beginning, you know, because Egypt is different. Egyptian cinema is a third world cinema, is supposed to be a post-colonial cinema. It produces counter Hollywood sort of images of Arabs and Muslims. It defines Islam differently than the way Hollywood defines Islam. There is complexity to how Egyptian filmmakers approach identity in a way. Even Egyptians' treatment of America, in a way, yes, it's reductive as Hollywood's reductive images of Arabs and Muslims, but still, in that reduction, there is layers of complexity added to that. And that's why I felt like in the book I ask the question, all the Egyptian films that I traced really present America in a very stereotypical, negative way. But then I don't necessarily see that as necessarily as an anti-American thing in a way, because I trace those productions or contextualize them in a way in differently. There's different power dynamics between Hollywood and Egyptian cinema, between the United States and Egypt, between the imperial colonial undertones that the U.S. Carries Egypt and how it stands in the Arab world as somehow a space throughout its history for pan-Arab nationalism, for Islamist politics, for state nationalist politics to emerge, and it has influence around. So I feel like at the end of the day, you can't just say, yes, there's a comparison between the two sites. Yes, there's a comparison in the sense that Hollywood and Egyptian cinema are both invested in producing nationalist understandings of themselves and the other. For Egyptian cinema, They understand Arab Americans, for example, in a very stereotypical way, in a very black and white way. If you're either, for Arab American characters, they're either Arabs or Americans. There is nothing, there is no such a thing as Arab American. And that's what I see happening in Hollywood. Of course, the only thing that is different about the Egyptian cinema is that it's done for different reasons. They're done out of state nationalist investments in one's national identity. They're done out of concerns for migration to the United States and brain drain. How the country is experiencing a lot of brain drain, loss to the United States and other countries. They're done out of a pushback against globalization, for example, a critique of globalization and the fascination, the Egyptian fascination of the American dream. The American dream as experienced not only in the United States, but the American dream as it's in the sense that how it was packaged to the globe, including Egypt, by embracing sort of neoliberal system, then people are promised to kind of rise and prosper like the American society. And so many of these filmmakers then are invested in critiquing America, not out of necessarily this hate or out of carelessness, but out of present them as critique. Present the United States as critique of the ailment of the Egyptian society in a way. But what happens at the end of the day, despite all this complexity that Egyptian cinema brings, I see it still, if you strip it out of all those layers of complexity, at the end of the day, it's very straightforward, binary. Like Hollywood, they do the same thing. Yes, they subvert Hollywood's messages in different ways, but they reproduce the same binary images that Hollywood has produced for decades. And that is presenting Arab Americans as either Arab, in the case of Egyptian cinema, as either glorified Arabs or denigrated Americans. Yes, it's different from the kind of binary images produced in Hollywood, which is you're either American or there is no such a thing as Arab American. You know, but mostly if you're an Arab in America, then that you're likely be a terrorist or someone who's set to undermine the society in a way. So, yes. There's difference in the types of binaries that the two cinemas project, but at the end of the day, they produce the same kind of way of thinking about Arab Americans. And that is basically that there is no such a thing as Arab Americans.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
And something that you just pointed out is actually quite curious, in something that I was wondering about while reading the text, is that this sort of maybe politicized overtones or undertones of the presentation of Arab Americans in Egyptian films and their effect seems much more conscious and built into the sort of ways in which films are developed and the narratives that they present. Whereas in perhaps Hollywood's production of Arab Americans in cinema, it seems like they sort of play into tropes, but it's not necessarily like it doesn't have a conscious political effect, that just seems to be, well, oh, these are just like entertainment representations and they don't really have like a real world impact. And I wonder if that is something that you saw as true, or if perhaps I'm not picking up on those undertones correctly.
No, that's a very good observation, really, of how I'm developing my analysis around these sites. And yes and no, in a way, right? I mean, yes, mm-hmm. they are different. They're definitely different because the genres are different. Mm-hmm. In Hollywood, for example, most of these films are action-driven.
Yes.
They're somehow, you know, entertainment, quick thrillers, require a quick threat to eliminate, and you're not very much invested in that threat in a way. You just want to, you know, get down to it and eliminate that threat. Mm-hmm. So Arab Americans then are terrorists. They're scary people. They are behind terrorist attacks that need to be eliminated. So the films usually are fast paced. There's no space for well developed multi-layered plots. But at the mm-hmm. same time, there's also a lack of interest I see in understanding other cultures to begin with. Yes. And that somehow is a cultural, a collective sort of cultural code that filmmakers have inherited for decades. There's mm-hmm. always a lack of interest in understanding others that they claim to represent in a way. So there's that context that, you know, that presents the you know it films that defy depth in treatment. For the Egyptian cinema, they are not, most of the films are not necessarily action films. They are melodramas, really.
Mm-hmm.
And melodramas are different, right? I mean, as by virtue of being, a melodrama, then that it requires more layers in understandings, in creating plots, in moving events, in developing characters. Mm-hmm. There is also a conscious effort in Egyptian cinema to think of inject character to associate cultural to associate persons as representations with of cultures and peoples in general, and that has always been done partly because it exists in Hollywood, but it exists even more in Egyptian cinema. Sometimes mm-hmm. because directors want to escape censorship, so they would want they create characters in a very interesting way that enable them to say a lot through characters than they could say if the film, like, in a more straightforward way. So there is that tradition in Egyptian filmmaking. But at the same time, also the dynamics, the South-North dynamics, the Egyptian-American dynamics are different when it comes to Egyptian cinema. Egyptians are more aware of America than Americans are more aware of Egypt in a way. And I'm saying mm-hmm. Egyptian filmmakers. Yusuf Shaheen some of the films that I analyze are based on his own personal experience of traveling to America, right? So there is mm-hmm. that more intimate understanding of America that you see lacking in case of Hollywood filmmakers' interest in the Arab world. If many of the films that shoot, many of Hollywood films that shoot scenes that relate to the Arab world are not always mm-hmm. necessarily shot in the same destinations. For example, a film about Yemen or a film about Egypt or a film about Iraq may not necessarily be shot in those countries to begin with. The obvious destination is usually Morocco. And for some reason, Morocco then appears to be the site where if you want to shoot in any Muslim culture or Arab culture, you just go to Morocco. So there is that distance, existing distance already in case of Hollywood. And when it comes to Egyptian cinema, there's that all conscious awareness of America, because America mm-hmm. is well and alive in Egypt and many Arab countries. The American influence on Arabic cultures is huge, you know, and mm-hmm. whether that is through consumerism, jeans, Marlboro, and all those American products, mm-hmm. or really films and television series and all these media networks are available in English, sometimes in Arabic, sometimes subtitled. You don't even dub them, you know. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of big influence on American influence on Egyptians that create conditions for a consciousness that somehow is more informed, more critical, and at the same time, for these filmmakers, pushes them to then want to produce a critique of some sort, right? So so the dynamics are different, basically.
No, definitely. I mean, and that's a fabulous point, I guess, if you are already starting from the perspective that I think is sort of culturally accepted, which is that the Middle East sort of exists as a monolith and one place can be a stand-in for another because it is all essentially the same, then of course your representation of those characters would be sort of reductionist in a very parallel way to that. Definitely.
That's a very good point, yeah.
Well, you raise, I mean, so many important points throughout the text, but one that comes across especially clearly and seems really fundamental to the broader argument that you're making throughout the book is the intervention that you make about studying diaspora and the possibility of diasporic voices to challenge what you say, what you refer to as the alienating contestations of national narratives. And I was hoping that you might talk a little bit more in depth about that particular intervention. Yes.
Yes, thank you. So the first two book chapters of the book then survey the bigger, present the bigger challenges, right? It looks at the problems that exist in the binaries promoted by Hollywood and Egyptian filmmakers. But the remaining chapters, really, chapters 3 to 5, look at efforts to present and different understandings of Arab Americanness away from Hollywood's "you're either a terrorist or not," right? And beyond the Egyptian cinema's "you're either a great Egyptian or a bad American," right? So I set forth in a journey to look at what sort of existing films in the two cinemas in Hollywood and Egyptian cinema to begin with, are there any films produced since 9/11 that are different, you know? And I identify two films. In the case of Hollywood, there is Traitor, and in the case of Egyptian cinema, there is a film called Layla Til Baby Doll or The Baby Doll Night. But at some point, I also felt like the need to look at whether there are any existing efforts by Arab American filmmakers themselves in narrating their own understandings of their identity, transnational identity, because many Arab Americans, if not all, of course, identify themselves as both Arab and American, but many have that consciousness, constant consciousness, even those who are born in the United States, that they're not always necessarily of one way. There's always the element of language that reminds them of that they are part of a different culture. The food they consume, the interactions they develop, the people they engage with, the news they watch. I mean, there's always that constant conscious understandings of oneself in transnational way. Not everybody necessarily does that, but like there's that bigger factor that is usually missing from cinema. And that's why I thought maybe the three chapters will look at any existing efforts to project that sense of transnational sense of identity. And and interestingly enough, I trace that in the three sites of cinema. In the case of Hollywood, the film Traitor itself that I analyze, it's stereotypical, yes. It's part of the same, more of the same kind of work that Hollywood produces. But that film is different, you know, because the character, the main character, is not necessarily clearly defined. You know, he's black, he's Arab, he's Muslim, he's American. Yes, he's involved in a terrorism plot, which is expected of any Hollywood film anyway. But what's different about it is that there's a sense of collapsing of identities in the character himself, where Islam and Americanness somehow contribute to shaping his own understandings of the world in ways that are not usually narrated and told. And in the case of the Egyptian film, The Baby Doll Night, you have two interesting characters. One of a Jewish Arab American character that is never usually really highlighted either in Egyptian or in American cinemas. We don't usually the understandings of Arab Americans is in along the lines of Islam and sometimes Christianity, but not Judaism in a way. So that film presents a very interesting understanding of Arab Americanness along also the lines of Judaism. And the other diaspora character presented in that film is Muslim, is an Arab Muslim American, not necessarily American, but U.S.-based Arab Muslim. And he's developing interesting understandings of his own identity along the lines of U.S. Arab worlds, in a way. The type of identity he brings to the table is one that is necessarily motivated by his interest in being both, rather than either or. The cinemas, mainstream cinemas, usually present audiences with. And when you look at then the self representation in the last chapter, how Arab Americans themselves narrated their own identity. Yes, the films I analyzed in chapter five are that there are three films. There is American East, there is America, and there is The Citizen. Yes, these films are mostly about U.S.-based Arab individuals, but there's that constant understandings of one's identity in transnational way, and much of all these films somehow then produce critiques of the American dream that challenge one's understandings of the American dream that is promoted in a U.S. nationalist way. So my point at the end of the day is then the type of consciousness that's emerging in the three chapters at least highlight is an exciting one to look to see in cinema, but it's one that is under examined, under also explored in a way. So, and I think there's a lot of space for that to develop in powerful ways. That I think the epilogue touches on that a little bit on that, but it's an invitation for scholars and filmmakers really to think in a different way beyond the constraints of nationalism in a way, whether these are U.S. nationalism or Egyptian nationalism.
Definitely, and you to just briefly return to the idea of self representation and the ways in which you sort of illuminate those possibilities in the fifth chapter of the book. I mean, you very interestingly take up both Nidhi Naber's idea of a broad spatio-temporal context and put that in conversation with Arjuna Poterai's notion of like diasporic public spheres to really illuminate the generative possibilities of Arab American self-representation in films to illuminate the multi-layered articulations of Arab American subjectivity, which I think comes across very clearly in that fifth chapter. And then the other point that you touched on just at the end of what you were just saying in the epilogue of the possibility that has been perhaps opened up for self-representation or for filmmakers, you know, in Hollywood, in Egyptian cinema, and Arab American filmmakers themselves to sort of challenge these sort of stereotypical reductionist images of Arab Americans. I mean, you end the book on what comes off as sort of a very hopeful note that, you know, even though much of Hollywood or much of Egyptian cinema's representations kind of maintain that limited framework, there is evidence that, you know, filmmakers are willing to push beyond those boundaries or to sort of challenge those representations a little bit. And then there exists, you know, a real possibility to move beyond stereotypes with self-representation in Arab American filmmaking. And I wonder if since finishing the book and now, you know, just before it's published, if you sort of maintain that same sort of hopefulness for the potential of self-representation to really challenge the images that have become really have become real tropes, but have become also sort of standard fare in a lot of films that portray Arab Americans.
Yeah, thank you. I think, aside from the hope, but I could revisit the hope part in a bit, I think it's urgent. You know, there is an element of urgency to this, you know. We live in a globe that is infected, not with COVID-19. Of course, COVID-19 is there, but it's infected with populism. And populism is rising in dangerous ways. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to Arab Americans, I think there is the Arab Americans feel that. They feel that in a very serious way. You know, if you're an Arab American activist, for example, then you'd likely be harassed either by the U.S. or by your country of origin, or a country that you affiliate with in a way in the Arab world, or you're invested in. And usually there is a sense of entitlement, nationalist entitlement, to prosecuting you, to harass you, to coerce you, to lock you, to sometimes in the case of Egypt, for example, even kill you. So there's an active sense of a rise in of populism that mm-hmm. that only makes the case for mainstreaming nationalist and understandings of oneself and rejecting difference or rejecting diversity or rejecting one's understanding of identity ever more rational, ever more appealing in a way, if we continue to move in this populist world in a way. And I think in this context, the stakes are high for filmmakers, especially Arab American filmmakers in this context, to produce new imaginations, new possibilities of thinking of one's identity that not necessarily always confined to certain nationalist expectations of one, in that defies, for example, Hollywood's expectations of Arab Americans to be patriots, to be imperative patriots, to be only narrated in the context of terrorism, to push Hollywood filmmakers to think beyond the limiting understandings of Arabness and Islam that's necessarily limited to foreignness, to difference, to fear in a way, right? So there's that, and also works that push against the repressive treatment of Arab diasporas in many Arab states. You know, since the Arab Spring, for example, in 2011, there was a lot of investment, even before that, of course, among Arab Americans in Arab issues. And that investment has never been captured on screen, or at least in ways that excite, motivate, inspire, showcase at least different voices, different narratives, different understandings of one's own identity. So there is an element of urgency to that, right? Mm-hmm. On the part of as far as hope, yes, I'm definitely hopeful, because I mean, we live in a world where filmmaking in general is not as controlled as it used to be in a way. The process of filmmaking, yes, is demanding. Yes, it's multi-layered and complicated, and there are a lot of challenges along the way. But it's become right now the infrastructure for Arab American filmmakers are much more available than they used to be, and with the emergence of technology and information and ability to an investment really in whether that's the form of tax benefits in Michigan or in film festivals that accommodate those works, or, you know, an appetite that Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu is basically offering to filmmakers and people who are interested in content in general. There is a lot of that, and there is consultations, and there is organizational support. The infrastructure, as we speak, is being built, but there is a need to still find ways to push beyond that, in a way to make some serious changes in the mainstream industries. I have yet to see, for example, mainstream actor like Arab American actors making some serious works within Hollywood, for example. And I'm talking about Arab American directors, Arab American actors that make the case or present the community in ways that are not necessarily always and only exclusively confined to the usual stereotypes in a way. When you look at an Egyptian director, an Egyptian American director like Sam Ismail, and an actor like Rami Malek in a series like Mr. Robot, that's a very popular robot, right? That's a very popular series. I wonder if there will ever be a possibility for the same team to produce works that deal with the community in a way. That's still not necessarily about terrorism. That mainstream understandings of Arabs as Americans, as transnational citizens, as folks with their own concerns and priorities that may not necessarily be falling into how people want to see them in a way, right? So there's that tension between individual filmmakers and actors and directors in Hollywood who are of Arab Americans in particular, who are seeking success individually. They want to be seen as for their talent. They want to be able to produce, to play character actors, for example. They want to play any characters they want. They don't want to be compartmentalized to their own ethnicity in a way. But there's also that demand and need from Arab American communities to see themselves represented in big ways, right? I mean, like how African American, for example, communities have emerged and have taken some active role in producing works that you could say produce interesting understandings of African American experiences away from mainstream understandings of their own experiences in a way.
Yes, definitely. Well, I don't think that I could have come to a better conclusion, but thank you so much for taking the time to sit down this afternoon and speak about your book, Arab Americans. It was a real honor to be able to read the book before it comes out later this month and to have the opportunity to talk with you about the book in depth. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your wonderful questions. And I really appreciate everything you've raised.
Great. Well, thank you. Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.